Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf. Vav Metzia Daf Zayin. We are holding 10 lines off the top of the Amud Mayhavi Alad Masusa. Here's the question. Two people were battling over this Masusa, this Merchatz, this bathhouse. Each one claiming ownership. One of them decided, you know, I have nothing to lose, let me make it Hegdish. Okay, that's what he did. So, can we continue using it or not? Does one have the ability to land Hegdish status on a disputed entity? So that was a Shiloh. And we are going to try to clarify that. Toshma, here comes a right. Here comes a conclusion. Da'amar b'chia bar abin hava uvda. This type of story occurred bei Rav Chisda, was presented to Rav Chisda, a disputed entity, one of them was Magdashit. What do we do? Rav Chisda bei Rav Huna. Rav Chisda forwarded it to Rav Huna to ask him how to proceed. Upashta, and he clarified, he concluded as follows. Mehod Amar Rav Nachman, based on what Rav Nachman tells us, Amar Rav Nachman, right? Any type of property, any type of possession, any type of entity that you cannot, you can't get it back. You know, you don't have the ability to regain ownership through the court system, through the bezdin. You know, you don't have a raya, you don't have edim. There's no way for you to validate your claim in the bezdin. So if he proceeds and makes it Hegdish, right? Hegdisha ene kadosh doesn't work because it's not really his. Likewise, in our case, where they were fighting over it, and clearly Rashi says they had no way to really confirm their ownership. Right? They had no way to bring it right, they didn't have the edim, whatever. So the Hegdish does not take effect. Asks the Gemara, let's make a diuk. Let's infer. Suppose he has the ability. He knows he has edim, he has proof. He'll be able to regain ownership through the court system. Hegdish Kadesh. So now, at this early point, this early stage, winning the court case, right? If he makes it Hegdish, it becomes Hegdish. Even though he didn't actually extract it, he didn't actually retake it. So just because he has that potential, we view him as an owner? Doesn't Rabbi Yechanan teach us otherwise? Gazal v'lenisiyashu abaylam. Shimon robbed an item from Reuven. And Rashi says typically we have edim on that. Right? You can get it back, right? V'lenisiyashu abaylam. And the owner did not yet forfeit his rights. He didn't give up on it. So he's still the owner, right? Shneim, both these individuals, Shimon who stole it and Reuven the owner, einam yichaydan lahagdishay. They cannot make Hegdish. They can't be Magdish's item. You know why? For two different reasons. In order for Hegdish to work, two conditions have to be met. Two elements of ownership, of possession. So firstly is ownership, and secondly possession. You have to own it, it has to be yours, and it has to be in your possession. A stolen item doesn't fit the bill on either account. Shimon the robber can't because it's not really his. And Reuven the owner can't either. You know why? It's his, but it's not in his care. So how could we say that if a person has the ability, he knows that he'll be able to regain ownership through the bezdin, he can make it Hegdish? Fine, it's yours. Maybe it's yours, but it's not Bershusay. Says the Gemara, well, mi savras b'mesuta metatlan askinam. you thought we're speaking about a tub, a bathing facility which is metatlon, which can be moved around like a tub. So there, you're fully right. As long as the item is out of your hands, you can't be magdish. It's not reshusa. But here we're speaking b'masuta mekarki askinim. We're speaking about a bathhouse. Karka. Tichiyachoy leitzia b'dayana. So here, if you would have the ability, if you would have the edim that can help you get it back through the dayana, b'shusei kaima. So, even now, at this early point, even before you actually carried out that procedure of repossessing, regaining control, it's already yours. It's still b'rishusoy, Rashi says, because karka ain't an exilis. You can't really steal karka. It's your property. It's yours. It's your possession. It's your possession and it's in your possession. So here, if you consider the owner, then you can make it hekdesh. Tony Rav Tachlifa, so Rav Tachlifa taught, and he was Bama Rav, he came from Eretz Yisrael. He presented the following halacha, kamei, in front of the Rabbi Yavo. Shnayim adukim betalas. If two people are holding on to a talas, ze noitel ach mokum shiyode magas, they're both clutching the talas, claiming ownership. What do? How do we split it? Reuben gets as far as his hands reach, and likewise Shimon gets whatever is in his hands, and the remainder, which is neither in his hands or in his hands, is now split equally. Rabbi Avo, so Rabbi Avo pointed upwards to Shemayim, be careful. Of course, we don't give anything without Yishvuo, concerned that this may have been snatched, right? As we learned back on Daf Gimel. Hey, asks the Gemara. Now this is a totally different resolution than the Mishnah, which says Yachleku down the middle. Here we give you the part that you're holding. We give you the part that you're holding, etc. Why? Elamas nisin nektani depalgi ba'dadi. Now the Mishnah, which says they split it equally, but loiktani doesn't say ze noitel ad makom shiyad magas, that you get what you're holding and he gets what he's. We don't. What case are we speaking about? Meaning, in what way is the Mishnah different than our story? Why do we treat it differently? Amra papa de tfisi bekar kashta. In our story, Reuben was actually holding part of the baguette in his hands, and Shimon likewise. The part that they're holding is not given for chalukah, for splitting, because whatever is in your hands is yours. You have a chazak on it, we give it to you. Right, but in the Mishnah, we're speaking that they're not actually holding the body of the baguette, but karkashta, the fringes. They're just like sort of hanging onto the fringes. So there, we can't say, "Oh, you take your half." Right, the whole baguette is sort of up in the air, and therefore we split it equally. We can learn from this halacha, meaning the fact that we consider the portion of the baguette that was in your hands as though it's in your possession only, and not by the other person. It's not up for dispute. We learn an interesting halacha. Hai suju. We have a piece of material, right? A kerchief, right? Given the toughest be shalosh al shalosh. So typically, a sudur was used for kinyan chalipin, exchange, right? So like we do by the weddings, right? We give the chasen. Usually, it's a like a pen or something, but they used to use a sudur, right? So here, take the material. Pick it up, be kainet, and in exchange for being kainet that material, you're giving me X, Y, Z. That's how chalipin works. Question. Do you have to actually clutch the entire garment, the entire material, or even just a little portion of it is enough? Hai sudur kivin de tafas be. Shalish al shalish. Once the fellow grabs hold of a small portion, 3x3 finger widths worth of the baguette, which is a minimum size of a kli, of a beged, Rashi says, Karina Bey, we already can apply the pasuk. It activates the pasuk of Anasan L'Re'eyu, hand over the item, and that triggers the chalipin system, the command of pasuk Domi Bekani, although technically, he's only holding a small corner of the beged. Most of it is out of his hand, but the part that's in his finger, it's in his hand, is considered like sort of separated from the rest. You've gotten a hold of a sheer beged. You're kind of the, with the kinin chalip. Just like in our case, where each fellow is entitled to what he was actually holding in his hands, despite the fact that, you know, three quarters of the beged is outside. It doesn't matter. What's in your hands is yours. Asks the Gemara, but we find that in some cases we don't apply this idea. Umayishna mid Rav Chisda, Dam Rav Chisda, get biyada umushicha biyadai. So the husband handed the get to his wife. The get is in her hands, but there's like a ribbon, a string attached to it. Strings attached, right? So he's still holding onto the strings. If that string is sort of knotted strong enough, tied strong enough that theoretically, if you pull it, the get would come back to him. If he should snatch it, bring that back to get. It's not a proper gerushin. But otherwise, meaning if it's a flimsy thread which cannot pull the get back, megureshes, then it's considered a full delivery. It's her get. She's megureshes. Why? Even if you can pull it back, but the fact is, whatever she's holding in her hands is fully given to her. It's in a sina, like the case of the talis, like the case of the suder by the chalipin. Well, says the Gemara, there we have to follow different guidelines. Hasam krisus ba'inan. It's called get krisus. Rashi says krisus means havdalah, full separation, without any strings attached. Hasam krisus ba'inan v'leka. You don't have that. Meaning, if he can pull it back, then he hasn't yet fully separated from her and the get. Hacha, but here, by the chalipa, nesina beinan, vayika, all you need is nesina, handing over. It's handed over. Sure, if I choose to pull it all back, I can do that, but currently it's in your hands. It's considered a nesina, and it works for chalipa, vayika. Amar Rava, im ha'isa talus musheves chalken. So Rava refers back, you know, to the Mishnah, Shnaim Echsen Metalis, right? They're both holding on to the fringes, as we said. We do Yachleka, we split the beged into two. Says Rava, you should know, even if it's a golden beged threaded with golden threads, we still make the chaluka. We split it evenly. Pshita, well, obviously, why not? The answer is the koi dehava b'mitzi. Must be speaking about a case where the golden part is right in the middle of the beged. Well, Hanami Pshita, there as well. It's pretty obvious. So why should that make a difference? We still split it equally. Like Tzricha must be speaking the Mikru Gavi Dechad. The golden portion is closer to one side, to one of the parties, than the other. So here, perhaps, Maudatema, perhaps he can claim the Amarle Seruven, who has the gold part next to him, can say, plug Hachi, you know, split it along its narrow side. So basically, if it's a long beged, I'm holding this corner, he's holding this corner, and the gold is near me, split it here. So have the gold stay on my side. Right? So the chiddush is no kamash blan. The point is, no, the amrina lay, or the amrlay, so the other fellow responds to him, my chaz is the palgasachi, who says he split it vertically, and you got the gold, ploy kachi, split it on the long side horizontally, and we'll both get equal share of the gold part. So that's the conclusion. Tana Rabba. Just as we have Shnaim Eichsen be Talis, we also have a case of Shnaim Adukin be Shtar. Shtar here is speaking about a loan document, a Shtar Choyv. So Shimon borrowed 100 from Reuben, they recorded it into a document, and now Reuben, the Malva, the lender, and Shimon, the borrower, are both clutching, they're fighting over the Shtar Choyv, this very Shtar Choyv. And what are they saying? Malva Eimer, Reuben the Malva, the lender, says, Shaliyu, this is my shtar. You owe me the money. Well, still buy me. For not for the money I dropped in Mutzasav and you found it. Give it back. You owe me the full $100. V'loiva Amar, Lovi responds, Shalcha hu, or Shalcha haya, or Shaliyu, operative. Bottom line, what he's saying is, no, it belongs to me because the loan I already paid you. So now, who's in the right? They're both holding on to the document, which supposedly would back up, you know, their respective claims if it were in their hands. But it's stuck in the middle between both of them. What do we do? At this point, the Gemara figures, it means we certify the shtar. We confirm that the signatories, the edim, who are testifying inside the shtar about the loan, are legitimate, are valid edim. And that allows the lender to collect on the entire loan. Whose shita is this? Divrei Rebbe. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Yachlaiku. No, they split it equally. 50-50. The Braisa continues. Nafal Yadayin. And at this point, the Gemara figures it means, let's say, a Dayan, a judge in the Bezdin, happened to find this shtar. We treat it differently. Lo Yitziu Elomas. Nobody can take it out of him. It waits by him until Mashiach comes, until Yonavi comes and verifies the owner. Rabbi Yisrael, no. Hariyah b'chaskas, we leave it as is and we collect with it. The Gemara soon will elaborate and explain exactly what these mean, what these shitas have in mind. Okay, let's go back. Amar mar. So we have the malva and the leva clutching the shtar. Yiskai mashtar b'chaysamov. So Rabbi's opinion is, we certify the shtar and that's it. We proceed. Really? V'gavili malve kule? We certify the shtar and we allow the lender to collect the entire debt? What happened to the leva's portion? He's still holding on. V'lesli masnis nishna meyuchsam metalis v'chule. What happened to the mishnah? They're supposed to have an equal share. Yachleik, just like by the talis. How could you force the leva to pay in full? Why are you considering the malve and the right and not the leva? Amarava, let me explain to you what the Braisa meant. Amarava, Amar Avnach, b'mekuyam, if in fact this shtar had already been previously certified by the Bezdin, it's confirmed, it's valid, all agree, you're right, 50-50. Divrei Kol Yachleik, of course, it's 50-50. There's no question, it's no different than the Talis. Ki pligi, the whole discussion here is, the machlekes is only b'she'ene mekuyam, the shtar was never certified. So technically, the leva can really claim that the shtar is forged, right? And it can also claim that he paid up the shtar, right? But the fact is, what is the leva claiming? Is he claiming forged? No. It's perfectly fine. It's an authentic shtar. But I paid it up. Parativ, I paid it up. So that's the shayla. Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi holds, moide b'shtar shekasva, even if the leva was moide shekasva that he wrote the shtar, meaning it's an authentic shtar, tzarech l'kayma, still, if the malva wants to collect with the shtar and override the leva's claim, the leva's objection that in fact that it's been paid up already, he wants to override that, tzarech l'kayma. First he has to find an alternate source of certification. He can't rely on the leva's words because the leva is saying two things at once. Yeah, it's authentic, but it's paid up. So you can't just take, you know, half of that statement and ignore the rest. So if the Mava wants to go his own merry way and ignore the Leva's arguments, he has to firstly confirm that the shtar is authentic. So he has to find independent verification about the authenticity of the shtar. And then he can say, okay, now that I have an authentic shtar, v'mekayim le polik, so now I can split it with you. V'loy, but otherwise, v'loy mekayim le, if he doesn't have alternate form of verification on the shtar, loy polik, he doesn't get anything. He can't even split it. My time, you know why? Chas v'balmahu. A shtar on its own is really like a piece of pottery. It's worthless. Maybe it's forged. So man kamashali l'hashtar, who's granting credibility to the shtar? Who's making it authentic? Leiva, the borrower, because he's the one admitting to the shtar, right? But at the same time, in the same sentence, hakama de priya, he's claiming that it was paid up. So unless you can find alternate verification, alternate certification, you can't proceed. For Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Sofer, he disagrees. Moide b'shtar shekosva ein tzarech l'kaymai. As long as the leva admits that it's an authentic shtar, I don't need to go find an alternate source of verification. So once we have an authentic shtar, even if I don't have another kiyum other than the Leivis admission, so we treat it as an authentic, legitimate, valid document, and we split it because we're both clutching it together. Okay? So that's the first part of the brice. Continues the brice, enough alei adayin. If the dain is holding the shtar, nobody can take it from him. What's the difference? If a dain is holding it, somebody else is holding it. Means like this. Up until now, it was the mav and the leva fighting over the shtar. Right? But va'achar shimotza. But let's say a totally different person, a stranger, found it. He found the shtar, this document, shenafal yadayin, which had been in possession of a dayin, which means, what does that mean? The kavasav be hempik. The shtar has that hempik, that certification, meaning the bezin already tended to the shtar, they certified it. Lo yitzio lomas, nobody can take it out of that stranger. What does this mean? Well, lo yitzio, needless to say, if it does not have that certification, you can't touch it. Lo yitzio be hempik, dikel mem, because there is a very real concern that this shtar was never really activated. There was never any money barred on it. Kasav little ways from but maybe, you know, people sometimes draft documents. They don't use it. Maybe he wrote it, but he never barred with it. So don't give it back to anybody. Elafilo kasav behempik the mekuyim. The chiddush is even if it has an hempik, which means it was certified. Which means it went through the process of the bezin looking after and certifying it. Lo yachzer, still don't return it. The chashin would be right. There's another concern. Maybe it was a real shtar. True. It was barred on, they barred on the shtar. But the leva paid back. Like he's saying today, I paid it back. So if you're a stranger, don't get involved. Hold on to it until Eliyonavi comes, or as Rashi says, maybe Edom will show up and tell us, you know, who dropped it. So that's the Tanakhama. Right? Rabbi Yossi, Savar lo harayu b'chaskasoi. Going to Rabbi Yossi, don't worry about it. Even if a stranger finds it, you can use the shtar, and we're not concerned. Give it back to the lender. We're not concerned that he, you know, was paid up. Why? Says Rashi, because demand the mahadli shtar parua la alta zorbe lekoyrev lemashile. What's the leva claiming? I paid it up and he already gave me the shtar and I dropped it. Well, nice try. Nobody does that. As soon as you get your shtar back, you tear it up right away for concern that it might drop, and right? For this very concern. So it's unlikely that you dropped it, Mr. Leva. Rabbi Yossi says, give it back to the malva. Asks the Gemara of Lechayish. So bottom line, we have two parts to the brisa, right? Part A, part B. Part A was a case where the malva and the leva are both clutching a shtar that they supposedly found. Or that they supposedly dropped, right? So, what do we do with, you know, how do we deal with it? So we have machlekes between Rebbe and Rabban Shimon Gamliel. Right? So if the shtar was mekuyim, all agree you do yachleiku. If it's not mekuyim, Rebbe says, you have to find your own source of kiyim before you can deal with, before you can proceed, Mr. Malva. And Rav Shmuel says, well, as soon as the Lev admits to the authenticity of the shtar, that is grounds for Yachleku. In part B of the Brisa, it wasn't the Malva and the Lev holding it, but it was a stranger. What do we do with it? So the Tanakhama says, hold on to it, don't give it back to anybody who's concerned about Piroim. Rav Yossi says, don't worry about Piroim. Right? If it was Mekuyam, it's certified, it's authentic, give it back to the Malva and let him collect with it. Asks the Gemara of Lechayish, Rav Yossi Piroim, is that true? The Rabbi Yossi is not concerned about this piroin, you know, possibility. But Tanya, listen to this brisa. Motzer shtar ksuba b'shuk. So here, instead of a shtar chayv, we have a shtar ksuba. Marriage document where the husband commits to his wife in the event of divorce or death. She'll collect the you know, a certain amount, right? So this fellow found a ksuba document out in the street. Where to? Right? Who does he give it to? The husband is moida, that it belongs to her. Right? I never paid her the ksuba yet, it's hers. So sure, give it back to the isha. Yachsul isha. Let's say he does not admit, meaning he's claiming that he already paid her the ksuba. and it was in his possession, and he dropped it. You can't give back to anybody. So apparently the Tanakama is concerned about Piroin, right? And likewise, Rabbi Yossi is concerned about Piroin. Listen to this, Rabbi Yossi, Omer, well, it depends. Oida tachas bala, she's still with him, she's still married. Yachsulisha, in this case, it's unlikely. Right? Why would a person do the ksua payout before he divorced? So, apparently, it's really hers, and she deserves it back. And this Armelo, and this Gasha, well, let's say, she had become widowed or divorced, then we're concerned that perhaps this ksuba had been paid up, because it already came due, right? So, lo yachsul, you can't give it back to anybody. This is Rabbi Yossi speaking. He's concerned about a paid-up document, which seems to be inconsistent with the first price. Where Rabbi Yossi says, don't worry about the piroin. Eifach. We have to switch around the shittos in the first price to make Rabbi Yossi consistent with his view over here. Uchayshish for piroin. So the price reads like this. Nafali adayin. Right? So if a stranger found a loan document, don't let go of it, hold on to it, because we're concerned about the document having already been paid up. That's Rabbi Yossi's shita, which matches his shita over here by the ksuba, where he shares a similar concern of piroin. And Chacham are the ones that say that if a stranger found the shtar chayiv, you can give back to the malva. Well, says the Gemara, very good. You've solved the Rabbi Yossi contradiction, but now we just triggered a new problem. Yachay kashya d'rabbanan d'rabbanan, because true, Rabbi Yossi holds we're concerned about piroin in the first price and in the second price, but the rabbanan don't seem to be concerned about piroin in the first price, right? They say, well, anybody finds it, give back to the malva. We're not concerned that it was paid up. Whereas in the second price with the ksuba, they seem to be concerned about piroin. Right, they say if the husband is not moida, hold on to it, don't give it back to anybody. Concerned about piroin. Kula Rabbi Yossi. Brisa number two with the ksuba is actually only Rabbi Yossi speaking. There's no rabbanan there. The chasur mechasur v'chitonin. The brisa is meant to be learned as though it's missing some words. You read it like this. It's all Rabbi Yossi speaking. He's the one that has the chashash of piroin. Rabbanan are not concerned about piroin. The brisa reads like this: Ein abal moida. The husband is not admitting. Lo yachshur lo lezev lezev. Don't return it at all. When is that true? Shenis armel and isgarsh. And isgarsh when it's after being widowed or divorced. There's a concern of piroin. But if she's still with him, yachsalisha, then she gets it back. Share Rabbi Yossi. This is all Rabbi Yossi speaking. As Rabbi Yossi tells us, she's still married, she gets back the ksuba. Unlikely that it was paid up. But in armel and isgarsh. And isgarsh, don't give back to anybody concerned about piroin. So that's approach number one in the Gemara. We flip the names in the first brisa. Rabbi Yossi holds up a chashash piroin. Rabbanan do not. The brisa of the ksuba is all Rabbi Yossi speaking, and there is a chashash piroin, provided she's no longer married. Rabbi Papa Amar Lo Elumay Seifach. You know what? You don't have to switch. You don't have to flip any names in the first brisa. Rabbanan are concerned about piroin. Rabbi Yossi is not. What about brisa number two, which provided that contradiction? Rabbi Yossi l'devrayim d'rabbanan kamar luhu. Rabbi Yossi was just sort of speaking on their wavelength. L'didi, my personal opinion is we never concern ourselves with piroin. If it was paid up, it would be gone. L'didi afilu nis'armelu oy nis'garsha nami l'chashin l'piroin. According to my opinion, whichever state she's in, married, unmarried, never concern of piroin. But at least you, l'didchu, you who are concerned about piroin as per the first price, but at least agree with me that when she's still married, nobody pays up a ksuba while married. At least agree to me, if she's still with him, the finder can give back to the isha, the lavas piroin, she's not piroin enabled. Nobody's paying a married woman her ksuba. Rabban responded, no, we're still concerned. Amor, there's a concern that srari atfasa. True, she's not at the point of collecting the ksuba. It's still very premature, but you know, there's always a concern about sorority. Maybe sorority on these bundles. Maybe he gave her a couple of wads of bills of for safekeeping. So that if and when it comes time to collect the ksuba, she'll have it available without need to hassle with the heirs, with the Yerushim. So that's their concern, and therefore, don't give the ksuba back to the Isha. Ravina Omar, here comes the third approach. Let's go back to the initial proposal, which was to switch the names in the first price, which resulted in the following equation. Rabbi Yossi holds a piroin, Rabbana do not. Let's proceed to the second price. The time of the Rabbanon Hocha, so why do Rabbanon concern themselves with piroin by the ksuba? Not because of piroin, mishum de chashin l'shtei ksubis. We're really not concerned about that possibility that the husband paid her the ksuba ahead of time. No. The concern is two ksubis, which means perhaps we just found the ksuba, right? So maybe because they lost the ksuba, he wrote her another ksuba. Right? You need a ksuba to stay. So she already has another ksuba in her possession. So when we speak about the husband denying, not that he's claiming that he paid her up the ksuba. No, that's not what he's saying. He's just saying, look, don't return the ksuba to the wife because it's her second one. She already has one. And when come time, she's going to elect two. Rabbi Yossi, l'shtei ksubas l'chayish. Rabbi Yossi says, no, I'm not concerned about this double ksuba possibility, remote possibility, and therefore, don't worry about it. Okay, so we have this price. Ashtar chayv was found. So it depends who's holding it. The malva, the leva, that's one option, or a stranger. And the other question is, are we concerned about piroin or not? Amar b'leza, machlekes. When do we say that we split the shtar equally between the malva and the leva? B'sheshneim adukim b'teifis, u'shneim b'teiref. So every document has two parts. Teifis is the standard, form, the generic part of the shtar. Then we have the teiref. Teiref is the revelation, meaning the personals, all the personal information. Right? Which has the date, etc. So the din of yachleiku is dafka when they're holding together holding either the teifis or the teiref, so there is no advantage to one over the other. Aval echad adik b'teifis. V'echad adik b'teiref. But suppose there is an advantage in the way they're holding it. One is holding the teifis, which is less valuable than the teiref. Because, if you sell a shtar, you can sell a document, right? A teiref has more value because it has the date, which allows you to collect from the properties that were sold by the borrower after that date, the properties that had that lien on it, right? So if somebody's holding the teifis, echad adik b'teifis, ve'echad adik b'teiref, the other fellow's holding the teiref, zenot al teifis, ve'zenot al teiref. We don't split the shtar equally, it's not 50-50. He gets the teifis, he gets the teiref. And soon the Gemara will explain exactly how this is carried out. Rabbi Yechonamar disagrees. Lo'olam cholkin. We always split it equally. V'afilu echad adik b'teifis. V'echad adik b'teiref. It's the Gemara's kasha. You mean to say even if it's an unequal possession, he's holding the teiref, he's holding the teifis, we split it equally. V'atani, we have that price. Remember with the talus? If it's an unequal grab, it's a lopsided chazaka, then we don't split it equally. Zenoite Vatani, Zenoite Almaskam Shiyadu Magas. Right? If you're holding on to the talus, not by the fringe, they're actually clutching the actual garment. So each fellow gets what he's holding. So he should get the teref, he should get the teref, the teifis. Leitzricha must be speaking the Koy teref be mitzi. Rabbi Yechon is speaking about a different case, where the teref part, the more valuable portion of the shtar, is right in the middle, out of, in between their hands, not being held by anybody. So then we say, Yachleiku on that. Yachim on the main, if that's the case, then it's simple. Why even discuss it? The chiddush is like the case before with the golden beggar, remember? The mikra v'gabi chad. We're speaking that the Torah is closer to one than the other. Perhaps I would say, Omle plagachi can claim, look, let's split it this way, I get the Torah. Kamash from the chiddush is, no, we do it lengthwise. The Omle, my chaz is the balgas. Hachi, plagachi, who says he do it this way, do it that way? So we both have an equal hold in the shtar. Okay, well, let's go back to Rabbi Elazar. He's speaking where actually one fellow is holding the teref, one fellow is holding the teifes. We give each respective party their part. How does that work? Amalei Rav Acha Medif to Ravina. The Rabbi Elazar, the Amar, Zenoit al teifes, Zenoit al teref. Really? So we actually slice the paper in half? Lamale, what does he have from it? Chilatzra pitzluchisa yutzarach. Does he need it to cover his jug? The jug cover, meaning you're taking a valuable piece of a document, and you're just turning it into just a worthless piece of paper by cutting it in half. Amalei l'dmei says, no, of course not. We leave the shtar intact. When we said yachleko on a shtar, we didn't mean split it physically. We meant that we split the value. Like we explained before, right? A shtar on a $100 loan, if it were to be sold on the mortgage market, it's worth 80, let's say, right? So we take that 80 and we split it in proportion to the part that they're holding. We're speaking about the lender and the borrower, right? We go like this. We apply the following formula. Shtar has a date in it, which allows you to collect from the mishabatim, which basically means the tariff part has the date. How much is it worth? Well, the last lay, the last beish man kamashavi, a shtar that does not have a date, i.e. the tefes part, how much is that worth? Because there's a disadvantage, like we explained. Beshtar this beish man, a shtar which contains zman, which presents the date of the loan, which allows it to collect from the mishubadim, gabi be mishabdi, that allows it to collect from the properties that have been sold by the borrower post-loan, right? Because we know exactly when the loan took place. But a shtar that does not have a zman doesn't have that ability, because you never know when it happened. You can't go after the buyers. Who says they came after you, right? So you only have to beni beni. So here, when one fellow is holding the teifis, which has less value than the teref, and the other fellow is holding the teref, so they have to sort of even that out. So the fellow holding the teref gets that extra amount. The part that his part, that his shtar, so to speak, is worth more than the teifis. So bottom line is, let's say this shtar can be sold for $80 with Eizman and only 70 with an Eizman. So instead of going 42 me, it's going to be probably 35 to 45, right? Because the fellow holding the teifis only gets half of 70, which is the value of the teifis. And the rest goes to the bala teref. And Shino back to the Mishnah. Even when we spoke about shleim oichsim betalis, yachloiku, we never meant we take a big scissors and slice the beged. You're ruining the beged. The word yachloiku in the Mishnah also means in terms of value. They split the value, not physically the beged. Because otherwise, shleim oichsim betalis. Okay, let's go back. Yachloiku nami damar ludmei. Yachloiku here is going on the brisa with the shtar. When we say yachloiku on the brisa, or Blaz's case, we understand, right? The teifis and teref, they're proportional, you know, a division. But in the brisa on a manav, which spoke about the mavad levi clutching the shtar in equal fashion, and we make yachloiku, we never meant split the paper. Ludmei, we were value focused, value based. Because that's what Yachloiku means in the entire Masechta. Because otherwise, if you don't agree to me, let's go back to the first Mishnah. Shnayim Yachsim Batalis. Hachanami Depalgi? You mean to say they slice the beggar into two? Hafsadu, they'll ruin it. Halei Kasha, that wouldn't be a Kasha. The Chazi Luktanim. Yeah, you can slice the garment into two and have little kids wear it. That's still fine. Well, what do you mean? Hadam Rebbe told us before, Rimhoisa Talis was Heves Cholken. If it was a golden beggar, very Chasha beggar, you also do Chalukah. Hachanami Depalgi? There too. Can you go slice it into two? Maybe a ordinary material can be used for ketana, but not a golden beggar. That's an elegant, you know, royal garb. You can't split it into two. You can't use it if it's too small. Hafsadur, you're ruining it. Halakash, no. The answer is the chazal b'nei melacham. It can be used for princes, small kids. So maybe it means literally split into two. Vadas, now what about the Mishnah Yishnaim Rechon Agave Behema? Two finders sitting on a behema. So we say yachlek, right? Hachanami de palgla. So you mean you actually cut the behemoth to two? Hafsador, you're ruining it. So bishlam et tahira, if it was a kosher animal, chazil abasar, you can split the flesh. Okay, so it can work. Elatmei hafsador, but if it's a non-kosher animal, you're ruining it. Elatmei, so it must be. They split the value. Right? They sell it, or one fellow, you know, compensates the other, right? Reimburses him for half the value. Hachanami ludmei as well. By the shtar and by the talis, it means we split the value. Okay, so let's summarize. We discussed when a person can be magdish something, has to be shaloi, has to be brishusoi. We spoke about shnam yechsam betalis, speaking about the fringes, they're holding the fringes, but if they're holding the actual beged, then each fellow gets whatever is actually in his hands, because he makes a kinyan on it, like we find in the case of the chalipin. Get is different, needs to be a full division, full separation. A golden beged is split in a way that they both get half of everything. Shnai madukim b'shtar, we have the malv and the loiver fighting over b'shtar, and we learned how to deal with that. We spoke about a stranger in possession of b'shtar, how to deal with that, whether we're chayshish v'peroin or not. Whether Rabbi Lezer's chiddush, this whole discussion is only when they're both holding, have an equal hold on the shtar, but if he's holding the teifis and he's holding the teiref, then the bala teiref has an advantage. And we concluded that when we say achleiku throughout the entire sugya, it's about value. All the best to you and atzlacha rabbah.